something going on with the inclusion of the abduction phenomenon, I thought, at the end, because it didn't really seem, it seemed to come out of left field for a UFO special. Sort of just threw it in there in the last, like, 20, 25 minutes. And I think it really hurt it was already going downhill with Roswell. I think then they threw in the abduction thing, and that sort of was the icing on the cake as far as putting the hurting on the UFO field, because they really seemed to find the most sensational abductees they could find, some really wild stories about hybrids and things like that, that people who follow the field, we know about that kind of thing, but to the general public, at that point, I think, and I was watching it with my family, and at that point, they sort of threw up their hands and were like, this is too over the top. You think that there was something like that going on there?
Well, it's very possible. I think the abduction phenomenon is a real problem also, in that it's a widely reported experience, and there doesn't seem to be, the government doesn't seem to be able to offer any convincing explanation as to what's really happening. Their policy has been sort of to pretend that it's not happening at all. So I think it's also a, you know, politically difficult topic, and it wouldn't surprise me if they would want it also to put a negative spin on that. I think there's certainly been a sustained effort in that direction that I write about in my book. Probably the most controversial, most managed aspect of the whole controversy, whole UFO topic.
Now, what's your opinion? It seems to be in the last, I'd say maybe 3-4 years or so, there's been a lot of these UFO shows that are cropping up on the History Channel type channels. You know what I'm talking about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Learning, you know, those shows, too.
Right.
Conspiracy, UFO stories, and things like that. What's going on there, you think?
Well, I think part of it is just that it's difficult because of the large number of cable channels and the large number of producers to manage all information related to UFOs. If you go back to the period when there was a kind of broadcast oligopoly of ABC, CBS, NBC, all of which had working relationships with the CIA, by the way, it was pretty easy to manage what the broadcast television audience was told about various things. But it's a little more difficult now in that you do have quite a large number of cable outlets. You have streaming video on the Internet and all sorts of other new media. And I think this has made it somewhat difficult to effectively manage the topic. There have been some very good programs on cable television. One is Out of the Blue. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah.
That was very well done, and it's been broadcast, I believe, on the History Channel or the Discovery Channel, I'm not sure which, many times. So that directly contradicts the official point of view on UFOs in a very powerful and effective way. And so I think there's a bit of a battle for public mind share going on, with propaganda countering each new round of revelations, if you want to put it that way. Some information does get through. I mean, that's the thing. We do have a lot of media outlets now, and it's just not possible to keep them all under control.
Well, obviously, we talk a lot here about the mainstream media, but what about the UFO, the pro-UFO media, or the UFO media in general? I'm talking about the radio shows that are, you know, they cover UFOs. They have the UFO guests on, you know, that's where you go to listen to find out the UFO news. What are your thoughts on how that's developed and how it stands as a means of getting information?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. There are some programs that have done a fairly good job, I think. Talk radio in particular has been a good conduit for discussion of the subject. It's a little bit, they're a little undiscriminating sometimes in terms of who they'll put on the air and the type of information they'll put out. And so in a way, it's good information gets canceled out by the bad information, or the credible information, I should say.
Yeah.
So, as I say in the book, I think that it is not possible to keep everything under wraps. Things do slowly creep out, leak out over time, and I think to some extent the U.S. government is a little bit like a king without any clothes on, you know, the story about the king's new clothes.
Yeah.
And that it's standing there, and, you know, they continue to deny that UFOs exist, but there's so much evidence out there now that they really do exist, and so many people who have broken their security vows and come forth, that it's become a bit of a credibility gap, I guess you could say. And I think this is reflected in the mainstream media, too, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. They continue the same government story, but if you look at the public opinion polls, most people already accept that there's intelligent extraterrestrials and that they're coming here and so on. So it's a bit like the old Soviet Union where, you know, people, Pravda and TASS kept reporting the government's point of view, but everybody in the real world knew that they were not telling the full story. And I think that's a bit like the media environment today. There's New York Times, CBS, and so forth are a bit like Pravda and Izvestia, TASS, and the old Soviet Union. They're still singing the official story, but people don't really believe it.
You sort of a sociologist of science. You sort of understand the field of science. What's your perspective on ufology, the field of science, the researchers, and how do you think, as far as fields of science go, how do you think ufology holds up?
Okay, well, I think the study of UFOs is similar to the study of other banned topics. If you go back in the history of science, study, say, human anatomy, the medical science, and so on, at one time it was forbidden by government authorities, specifically the Catholic Church, to study human anatomy. Scientists could not cut open a human cadaver and study physiology and anatomy because the church just didn't want them doing it. I think the study of UFOs is a little bit like that today in the sense that the government is not at all anxious for this particular topic to be investigated by scientists, and they prevent that by denying the phenomenon exists, first of all, and also, of course, preventing the scientific community from getting any research funds. So progress in the UFO field is hampered by this lack of funds, more and more academics are beginning to take an interest in the subject, but you can't really go to the National Science Foundation or some organization like that and get a grant to study UFOs. It's just not quite to that point. And I think this is not an accident. I think the military intelligence community decided that this was something they wanted to study first so that they get the upper hand on the situation, and they wanted to discourage the world of private science or the world of public science from taking an interest in it. So I think progress is slow in understanding it, and it probably would be a lot faster if we knew what the military intelligence people know. We had, say, a few $100 million in grants, but I wouldn't hold my breath.
Now, you talk a little bit in the book about disinformation agents and how they sort of infiltrate the field of ufology. And recently this whole Richard Doty thing came about. And how prevalent do you think this disinformation agent problem is?
Well, you know, Philip Klass just died recently, so it's an opportune question. I think that was Phil Klass's role. My personal opinion is that he was injecting disinformation into the media. That was pretty much his job. And it's very common for the intelligence community to employ people working undercover as journalists in order to inject this kind of disinformation. It's one of many methods that are used. So I think it's pretty common. Not long ago there was a report released by the CIA. It was a so-called official history. You never really believe what the CIA says about history, but anyway, they made a claim that most of the UFO reports in the 50s and 60s were due to spy planes such as the SR-71 and the U-2. Well, that's sort of a preposterous claim on the face of it if you're all at all familiar with UFO reports, because UFO reports don't bear much resemblance to the flight characteristics of spy planes. Spy planes are almost always high-altitude aircraft. They're designed to be very difficult to detect, both visually and on radar, and they don't make right-angle turns and hover at low altitude and glow in the dark and so forth, all the things that commonly reported UFO sightings. So it seemed a pretty fantastic claim, and Mark Rodiger of the Center for UFO Studies actually found a former staffer at Project Blue Book, and he asked him about this, and he said, no, it's absolute nonsense. There was no agreement between the Air Force and the CIA to cover this up, and in fact, he said he never received a single report that he thought could be attributed to spy plane. So that's a classic example of disinformation, but the New York Times, of course, picked that story up and ran with it and made a big deal out of it, and it wound up in newspapers all across the country. So this process of injecting disinformation is an ongoing thing, and it's done in many different avenues.
Yeah, that's the troubling part, is when something like that comes out. Like you said, if you know anything about UFO reports, then you know it's preposterous, and sadly the general public doesn't. And, you know, they end up sort of just taking the bait.
Yeah, some people are, but I think, I give the public a little more credit for that, and credit than that. And, if you look at public opinion polls and also polls and surveys of scientists, the skeptics are actually in the minority. The majority of people do accept there's a UFO phenomenon. In fact, the majority of scientists accept there's a UFO phenomenon. Now, not all scientists may think that they're extraterrestrial. They may think there's another explanation of some sort, but they do accept that there's a mysterious things happening in our atmosphere, which we don't understand. That the subject ought to be studied further to clarify the issue.
The tide seems to be turning, and I certainly think if when more people seem to roll their eyes when the government makes any sort of announcement about UFOs in relation to, like you're saying, a CIA study, or when they come out and say something about Roswell, I think a lot of people sort of, at this point, sort of roll their eyes about the whole thing because they know the government's not going to tell them the truth.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they're used to being misled by the government. In fact, not long ago, my wife was celebrating her birthday, and I gave her a birthday card that said, have a Washington, D.C. birthday, and you open it up and it said, lie about it, cover it up, and just deny it ever happened. The fact that there are such cards being published and distributed is an indication of how cynical the American public has become about the government generally. They're accustomed to the fact that the government lies to them routinely about all sorts of things, not just UFOs. So people are, in a sense, I think people are out ahead of the government, and it's the American public ultimately that will take the lead on issues like this.
The mainstream media, they're slant on the UFO phenomenon. How do you think it's evolved over the years, and where do you think this message is going? Has it been sort of, at times, the extraterrestrials or the UFOs were sort of dangerous, and then there seemed to be a period where they were sort of friendly, and now it's sort of alternates. You never know what kind of alien you're going to be dealing with. I know, at least I seem to think there's a conditioning process at work here, but to what end? What do you think?
It's really difficult to know whether there's any orchestrated policy of slow release. Very possible that is what's going on, but hard to say for sure. I noticed some years ago, I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the New York Times actually did an article about cattle mutilation. And it wasn't a bad article. I mean, it was fairly level-headed and accurate, and it was surprising to me that the New York Times would even recognize there were such things as cattle mutilation, much less, do a story on it. And, of course, anyone who's lived in the West knows that cattle mutilation has been going on for decades. It's been widely reported in newspapers all over the Western states. It's been very controversial and subject of a lot of investigations. So it's really hard to know what to make of that. It could be that the media is trying to cover themselves in a way by addressing things that the public already accepts are real. Or it could be that there is a slow release of information going on, and maybe they get directives about what they can report about and what they can discuss. And gradually the plan is to bring people up to speed. But I'm a little skeptical about that generally, though, because I think I haven't seen too much change in the editorial stance of the big media companies over time. They still come down pretty hard on what they call the UFO believers, and they're pretty skeptical, pretty strong skeptical tone. So I don't know, quite say what's going on there.
That makes the whole concept of disclosure sound pretty hard to pull off, because they would have to do a 180 overnight. It seems
there'd be a lot of people asking questions about where were you guys, because this stuff was happening. I mean, everybody knows it's been going on for decades, and yet the big media companies have really turned a blind eye to it. So they'd have a lot of apologies and explanations to make in order to salvage their credibility. I think their credibility is actually pretty badly damaged already, though, if you talk to public opinion experts.
They would have a field day with the UFO disclosure with the graphics and 24-hour news. It would be unbelievable.
My book is far from being a bestseller or anything like that. There's only probably a few thousand people that have read it. But, it could be seen eventually as a classic in the sense that, I did focus on this topic before, I think, anyone else in a systematic fashion.
So absolutely, yeah.
I think there probably will be some retrospective studies of how this whole thing played out. I think the truth will emerge eventually. I think that, with private space travel starting to take place and, people developing technological capabilities that were once only available to the intelligence community, there's going to be some fairly hard evidence over time that will, I think, remove any doubt about the reality of UFOs. And at that point, the history books will slowly be rewritten.
And do you think the ufologists that we know of, the Stan Friedman, James McDonald, I.J. Allen Hynek, do you think they'll get the credit they deserve?
I do think they will. A lot of scientists who are very well known today and made a huge impact on science, and I'm thinking of people like Alfred Wegener, who posed that the continents drift around over the surface of the Earth. At the time they were living, their ideas were thought to be completely ludicrous, and they were practically laughed out of the scientific community for suggesting the ideas that they did. And yet, after decades, sometimes after they had died, their life work became, pivotal and widely accepted. So it can take, literally 50 years sometimes, or even more, for some ideas to be accepted. I know meteors are meteorites, which are stones that fall from the sky, were thought to be completely absurd for about 200 years. So it took about that long. And even the Wright brothers had a very difficult time persuading the media that they had actually accomplished powered manned flight. Scientific American scoffed at the idea and said that it was completely anti-scientific to believe that such a thing was even possible, and they refused to report what they had achieved for about 5 years. There's a very good book about that called Alternative Science. The author is Richard Milton, M-I-L-T-O-N. There's a lot of resistance to new ideas of any kind, and especially when you're fighting an orchestrated propaganda program, which I think they have been.
It's to become
difficult to overturn the scientific paradigm.
So this would be kind of compared to the Galileo Copernicus type of thing.
Yeah, I think it would be more similar. Yeah, I mean, that would be a good analogy, because Galileo and Giordano Bruno suggested there were other worlds and intelligent beings on other worlds and so forth, and he was burned at the stake for just making that suggestion. They were fighting the same kind of battle that ufologists are fighting today. It's an ongoing process between the truth and political expediency.
Now, in the book, you tell a pretty funny story about Phil Klass, and actually, I had already thought of this question before the news came out that he had died. This will be airing much later than that, probably about 6 weeks after today. Why don't you tell that story about you and Phil Klass, because I thought it was pretty amusing.
Okay, well, I was living in Seattle several years ago, and PsyCop decided to hold their annual convention in Seattle, and so I thought, boy, this will be fun. I went down there with a friend of mine who's also interested in the UFO topic, my brother-in-law, actually, Jeff Olson. And, we sat in on a lot of the UFO-related topics and presentations, which, of course, were very heavily slanted against the reality of UFOs, not surprisingly for PsyCop. At one point, I managed to get into a discussion with Phil Klass after he had spoken about, I think it was Roswell. His initial position was that the government couldn't keep secrets. So I slowly began chipping away at that idea and suggesting, you know, that, well, in fact, they've done a pretty good job at keeping secrets in the past. You know, they've kept quite a few things secret. So he gradually had to admit that not only that they keep secrets, but that also his publication for which he worked, Aviation Week, had helped the government keep some of its secrets. his organization was complicit in helping the government keep secrets. Well, this was all sort of embarrassing to Phil, I think. And at one point, he just sort of became exasperated, and he said, well, you'll go to your grave without ever understanding or without ever knowing the truth about UFOs and so forth. Well, I don't know how he could be so sure that I would go to my grave without knowing the truth unless he was sort of on the inside.
That statement by him was really compelling.
Yeah.
That, like, I had to reread that like two or three times to really sort of wrap my head around what he was trying to say something there without saying anything.
Yeah, well, I think what he was saying was that the policy is to deny the existence of this subject, you know, as long as possible.
Yeah.
And that seems to have been the case. I mean, I talked to him years ago, and nothing fundamental has changed, at least as far as the government goes, about the whole topic.
What do you know about this Disney special that was aired in some markets, unannounced, one time only, never to be seen again? I've heard scant rumors about it. I've heard people mention it in some presentations, but I'm sure you must know something about that.
Yeah, that type of thing has actually happened a number of times.
Oh, really?
The government has evidently leaked to the media that there was going to be a release of information, and it never manages to actually take place. I know Disney prepared something like that. It's significant, I think, that Disney did it, because Disney is a propaganda. I mean, they have done propaganda for the U.S. government in the past, so they were even mentioned specifically in the Robertson panel report as a possible conduit for UFO-related propaganda. I don't really understand the whole situation around that, other than, like you say, they produced this thing. It may have been a trial balloon to test public reaction. Really hard to know what was going on there. There was a item that appeared in U.S. News and World Report, which is a fairly conservative news magazine, and the gist of it was that the U.S. government was preparing to release some shocking revelations about UFOs.
Wow, that was in the U.S. News and World Report?
Yeah, it was in U.S. News and World Report, just reported in one of those kind of Washington Insider columns or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, nothing ever came of it. There was never any release of information. So you wonder what that was all about, too. I mean, are they doing some sort of public opinion experiments, you know, to see what sort of reaction they get out of these sort of trial balloons? Or I really don't know.
What do you think about these stories that are coming out of India now? It's from the India Daily. That I don't know anything really about the India Daily. It could be like Pravda, or it could be, you know, it could be just a phony baloney website. But there seems to be two, three UFO stories a week.
And yeah, that's interesting to me, because there's a story told by John Kenneth Galbraith, who's a world famous economist, and he was ambassador to India in the Kennedy administration, if you probably recall that.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, he says that when he went to India, CIA was very active in India in many, many different arenas.
Really?
Much to his distress, because he didn't think very much of the CIA generally, and John Dulles particularly. But at any rate, one of the things that the CIA was evidently doing in India was that they were running a tabloid-style newspaper, very much like the National Enquirer, and it was really kind of over the top, you know, and he made some inquiries about it and found out that the CIA was running it. It was a CIA front organization.
Oh, no. Was it called the Indian Daily?
Well, you know, it sort of made me wonder about the Indian Daily as to whether the CIA might be behind this, whether it's some sort of disinformation program or, you know, what's really going on there. I really don't know for sure. I haven't done any research on on it to find out, but I see these stories popping up on the internet.
Oh,
and I would not be the least bit surprised if the CIA is using the internet actively to inject disinformation about all sorts of things.
Yeah, that was one of my next questions here. How do you think the internet has evolved as a medium with regard to the UFO phenomenon? Is it overkill and obfuscation?
On the whole, I think it's probably a good thing, in that if you are discriminating, you are able to sift the wheat from the chaff, you can learn things from the internet that you wouldn't find out any other way. So that's a good thing. There's a lot of information on the internet, of course, it's completely bogus, and it's very misleading, and it confuses a lot of people. So that's the negative side. The internet also provides an avenue for the intelligence community to keep tabs on what UFO researchers are saying to each other, because they can read their mail.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great intelligence gathering instrument for them. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, clearly, but I personally think the internet is a good thing, in that it does allow information to get out that otherwise wouldn't be able to be widely disseminated.
What was the reaction after you published the book from your peers in the mainstream journalism area? And well, you weren't really, were you known as the sort of, you get tagged as the UFO guy. Like, at my job, I'm the UFO guy. You know, were you like that already? Or was it like the book came out and then people were like, oh, I never knew?
I've gotten some feedback from grassroots journalists who like the book quite a lot. Some of them are pretty skeptical. We tried to get Democracy Now! To do a program about this, and they really backed away from it because they couldn't quite get their mind around the idea that that this kind of thing was going on, that there was a propaganda program related to UFOs, which is sort of odd because you think they'd be savvy enough to realize that, you know, the CIA has been involved in all sorts of things. Why wouldn't they be involved with UFOs too? But it's sort of a you know, the intelligence boys have done a pretty good job at marginalizing the UFO topic, and there's a lot of big media companies that won't go near it. Journalist Leslie Keene, who shares my interest in this topic, has tried to do, has successfully done, actually, a number of good articles about UFOs, but she's had a very difficult time getting them into the newspapers. They usually are vetoed by the management. And it's only when the management is on vacation or something that she manages to get something in. So there's a pretty strong opposition that, you know, the organized mainstream media against the subject, even in the so-called alternative press. They won't go near it.
I've noticed that. I've really noticed that they it's a very hard subject for them to cover, which is really, it's really too bad, because this is, I think, one of the, in my opinion, one of the five best books I've read in the UFO field.
Oh, thank you.
It's so educational. If you study UFOs, if you study the UFO field, you have to read this book, because there's no other book that tackles the subject.
And I think you have to understand a broader context, not just UFOs, but, you know, the history of the media-government relationship and the role of the intelligence community in managing information generally. If you don't understand those, then you won't be able to understand the UFO topic and how it came to be the kind of marginalized topic that it is today.
Exactly. I think you also think they use the giggle factor pretty heavily, I think, in suppressing the UFO phenomenon. That's been probably one of their biggest tools. Now, the book was published in the year 2000. It's been 5 years since then. What do you think? What's your reflection on that time since then? First of all, the reaction to the book, not just in the mainstream and from the people you know, but from the UFO community, and how you think things have changed since you published the book.
I don't know if things have changed a great deal. I've gotten a lot of good feedback on the book, but I had hoped to have more, I had hoped to have a greater impact on the journalism community, and I don't know if I've been successful at making many inroads in that area. Part of the reason is that I didn't go the traditional route of going through a big publisher and, you know, doing all the promotion and all that. I've become a lot more sophisticated about the publishing process since then, and I think if I did it today, I would do it a slightly different way, and I would do a lot more promotion.
Yeah.
I'm actually thinking about doing an updated version of the book I've created a new website for it, which is much more detailed and provides a lot of documents and news clips and so on that would have been good to include in the book, but I couldn't do for economic reasons. So that'll kind of supplement the book, but I'm hoping I can do an updated version and publish it in a little different manner in a way that I can get more publicity outside the UFO subculture. These things tend to be kind of, you know, they're accepted within the UFO subculture, but they don't often make much of a splash outside of that.
Yeah.
In that sense, I feel that I've sort of failed.
Oh, no.
So maybe in the long run it'll have more impact than I thought it would.
Pretty much the final question here is, what's next for you?
Another book on a different subject, or a related subject, but I'm not quite sure which way to take it. I'm in touch with a number of people that are working on projects related to this and that share common interests, and maybe we will cooperate in some fashion, but I can't really, nothing really specific at this point that I'm prepared to announce.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you. I think people are going to be blown away by this interview because we covered a ton of ground and so much stuff, and you can learn so much from the book that I recommend it to anybody who's trying to get to the bottom of the UFO phenomenon, because you can, it really takes the blinders away from getting your information on the UFO phenomenon. It really helps you see, you get the news, the UFO news, and you can kind of put it through that filter and figure out maybe is there an alternative, something going on here. And I highly recommend the book to anyone who's even listening to this at this point. You've got to get this book. It's awesome. It's amazing. It's The Missing Times, News Media Complicity in the UFO Cover-Up. The author is Terry Hansen. I want to thank you very much for this interview.
I was glad to do it. Thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity.
That does it for this week's Been All of America Audio, Season 1. I want to thank Terry Hansen for sitting down and talking to us. Terry Hansen's website's www.themissingtimes.com. You can find out more information there about his book and how to get it. Next week, Robert Miles, abductee, UFO documentary filmmaker. He'll be on to talk about his work and his experience as an abductee. Big thanks to all you guys out there listening, and Leslie and Chiron of BeenAllOfAmerica.com. You'll be hearing from me next week with Robert Miles.